Well, good evening. We're going to do a little bit different tonight. I'm not going to have PowerPoint slides. We're going to watch a video here in a little bit. We've been talking about the Ice Age. And somebody asked, well, what does that have to do with the flood? Well, I think as we'll see, the two go hand in hand. There's been a debate as far as, you know, some of you may have heard there were three or four ice ages. Sometimes they're even saying now there may have been as many as 50. But when you really look at the evidence, it's really showing that there was one. It may have receded and grown and receded and grown a few times, but there was one. And then when it was over with, it receded. During the Ice Age, about 30% of the land was covered in ice, glaciers. Today, we have about 10% of the land covered in glaciers and ice. But an ice age requires specific events to happen. As Liam and I were talking here before we came here to church, you know, we have winters, it gets cold, we have ice, but then what happens? It warms up and melts. Sometimes a little slower than others. But an ice age requires cold to be for an extended period of time, years. So what would cause that? Well, there's, of course, evidence, and even scientists today, they talk about the ice age was probably caused by volcanoes erupting. They talk about maybe as many as 50, putting the ash and the gases up in the atmosphere. It blocks the sunlight. It causes the earth to cool down. Well, during the flood, we know that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. We know that the earth broke open and water came forth from underneath. There was a lot of changes in our earth. And during this time, we talk about the tectonic plates that are shifting today. We have earthquakes. Well, during this period of time, it is quite possible that it was a lot more active than what it is today. There were a lot more of those volcanoes erupting at once. This would cause the water to warm up. The oceans today, on average, are about 38 degrees Fahrenheit. Of course, we know that in the tropics and around the equator, it's going to be a lot warmer, but North Pole, South Pole, it's cold. It's estimated that during this time of activity, of all these volcanoes erupting, spewing lava into the ocean, that the water temperatures could have been as much as in the 80s around the world. And so you've got to have three different things, as they mentioned. There has to be cold summers and also cold winters. But then there also has to be lots of moisture for it to come down as ice, snow, and then accumulate over several years. So this has to be present for several years. It's not just a one-time event for one bad winter and then it warms up. It had to happen year after year after year after year for this ice to accumulate. Some of the ice in the northern hemisphere was as much as 2,000 to 3,000 feet thick. The Antarctic down south, about 4,000. And some of it down the Antarctic, still pretty close to that. But cold temperature doesn't produce moisture. Cold temperature, generally the moisture level is very low. So if the earth was cold, how do we get the moisture? How do we get the snow and the ice? Again, the oceans were warm. And so the heat would rise, it'd get up in the upper atmosphere, cool down, and come down as snow. So when you got warm oceans, but also cold land, that would cause the ice and the snow to accumulate and form the glaciers that we can actually see today. But again, it covered a lot more area back at that time. He's going to mention a few things in this video that maybe go over just a little bit. One is moraines. If you hear the word moraines, he's talking about as the glacier would form and it would go down the hillside, is pushing rocks and dirt, and where those deposits are left, those are called moraines. There's a ground moraine. This would be the rock and the silt and things that were left in the valleys. There's a lateral moraine. This would be the deposits that would go along the edge of the glacier. And then the terminal moraine is the debris that was left at the very edge, the furthest edge of that glacier. So these glaciers are forming. The ice is forming. They're moving slow, but they're still pushing rocks in front of it, pushing debris in front of it. And so this deposit that's left are called moraines, and they have different types of terms according to where they're located. But if he does mention moraines, that's what he's talking about. Of course, volcanism is the eruption of volcanoes. This is probably one of the biggest catalysts of the Ice Age. Uniformitarianism, we've talked about this before. This is the idea that nothing's really changed in the past. A lot of scientists that believe in evolution, that's the way they look at the evidence that they see. They don't look at the flood as a catastrophic event that affected the whole world. To them, that did not exist. So they have to try to explain it some other way. And so they do have a lot of problems trying to figure out how these ice age took place. But they come up with some fanciful theories. But when we look at the evidence, and we know that the flood occurred, and it left physical evidence that it occurred, we can put all these together and say it fits. The average depth of the ice in the northern hemisphere, as I said, was about 2,100 feet. The average depth of ice in the southern hemisphere, which is basically the Antarctic, was about 4,000 feet. And so the Ice Age required these factors to be happening at the same time. It's estimated that maybe it happened up to about 500 years. And during that period of time, the Earth was cooler than what it is now. And especially, like I said, in the northern hemisphere, the southern hemisphere, the Ice Age, or the ices, the glaciers moved down into the middle of the United States. So it was pretty cool. But again, the flood helps to explain some of this. Of course, we don't know all the details. We don't know exactly how everything fits together, but when you've got different pieces of the puzzle and you start putting them together, the flood is a good catalyst for the Ice Age. It explains it better than about anything else anybody can come up with. And when you look at an event like the flood, it affected the whole world. It changed it. We read about in Peter where it says that the old world perished. It changed drastically. And when you make something like that happen in a short period of time, there has to be repercussions. You know, things didn't just go back and stabilize themselves in the next year or two. It took a while. And while it was doing that, stabilizing, the Earth apparently cooled down and brought forth the Ice Age. Well, go ahead and watch the video if everything goes well. I've been working with this thing off and on, trying to get it figured out. We've got Fred back there. He's the expert, so he can get it going. But we'll watch this, and if you have any questions afterward, we'll discuss those.
Here we are at the ocean. The oceans play a vital part in the development of an ice age. What are the requirements for an ice age? First, you need much cooler summers. Winters are already cold enough in most areas where the ice occurred. The second ingredient is much more moisture, and that's where the ocean comes in with much heavier evaporation. The third mechanism is it needs to persist year after year to let the snow and ice build up year after year. So those are the three requirements for an ice age. Well, could the Genesis flood have been the trigger, the climatic trigger for an ice age? Indeed, that is the case. How would that happen? How would the Genesis flood fulfill the three requirements for an ice age? First of all, the Genesis flood was a gigantic tectonic and volcanic event. And after the flood, we'd have all this volcanic ash and aerosols trapped in the stratosphere after the flood. And these reflect a lot of sunlight back to space, cooling the surface, especially the continental areas in summer. So there's where you get your summertime cooling, is by all this volcanism. But volcanic ash and aerosols filter out within a matter of months to years. So there needs to be a mechanism to replenish the aerosols. And aerosols are very small particles, about a micron in diameter. You need a mechanism to replenish the aerosols and ash. And indeed you do. During the Ice Age, the Earth was still not quite in equilibrium from the flood. So you had a little bit of tectonics, a lot of volcanism going off. We have a lot of ash beds and other volcanic material indicating much higher volcanism during the Ice Age. And this would replenish the volcanic ash and aerosols in the stratosphere and keep the summer cooling continuing. These stratovolcanoes we have in the Cascades, like Mount Hood, is just one of many hundreds of post-flood volcanoes that were going off immediately after the flood for quite a while, probably because the Earth was still out of equilibrium from the flood and was still settling down. To the north of us, we can see three other stratovolcanoes, Mount Adams, Mount Rainier, and then Mount St. Helens with the top blown off. Geological equilibrium means that, you know, the Earth had a huge tectonics, and as a result had a lot of cracks and magma coming up, causing a lot of volcanism. We had a lot of faulting. It took a while to settle down, and everything slow up, and the volcanoes lessen, so that we only have just a little bit of volcanism now, and only small Earth movements going on. In general, we would be consider that geological equilibrium at the moment, even though we still have movements of faults and volcanoes going off, but it looks like a lot less than immediately after the flood. Now, we know that volcanoes cause cooling, in fact, global cooling for the larger volcanoes, because in historical times, we've measured this. For instance, when Mount Tambora went off in 1815, that's the largest eruption in historical time. It caused volcanic ash and aerosols to go around the globe, and it caused the year without a summer, they call it, in 1816 in the Northeast United States and also Northern Europe. There was crop failures, summer frosts, harvests that failed. We know that volcanoes cause cooling. Other volcanoes cause cooling, like Krakatoa caused cooling, Mount Pinatubo, El Chichon. These were volcanoes that went off, these last two are volcanoes that went off in the last 30 years. And these have all caused a little bit of global cooling, generally about maybe 8/10 of a degree Fahrenheit for up to about 3 years. But these are small volcanoes compared to those immediately after the flood. We have evidence that some were so huge they block out most of the sunlight for a month or two. And these stratovolcanoes that went off at the end of the flood, and mainly early post-flood, were huge. Look at the size of these cones. These represent tremendous volcanism and sending up huge layers of ash and aerosols in the stratosphere. And these are just in the Cascades here, maybe a dozen of them. It's just a few of the hundreds across the Earth that were going off early in the Ice Age to replenish that ash and aerosol layer left over from the flood. And all this post-flood volcanism reinforces the ash and aerosols in the stratosphere to continue the cooling for hundreds of years. The second mechanism for an ice age is abundant moisture. Where does that come from? Well, at the end of the flood, the oceans were very warm. Why? Because the Genesis flood was a tectonic volcanic event, and a lot of probably groundwater was added to the pre-flood ocean, so you'd end up with a warm ocean from top to bottom and from pole to pole with no sea ice. Well, the significance of this is that with a warmer ocean, you get much more evaporation into the air. For instance, at an ocean temperature of 86 degrees Fahrenheit, you get 7 times the evaporation as you do at water that's 32 degrees Fahrenheit. So with warm oceans at mid and high latitudes, you get tremendous evaporation. And this moisture would get caught up into storms, and the storms would have so much more snowfall that would turn to ice for a rapid ice age. Dr. Larry Vardaman has modeled the effects of a warm ocean. in various storm patterns in the eastern Pacific. He's warmed up the temperatures, and he's shown how much precipitation you get in the Sierra Nevadas as well as Yellowstone National Park. And what he discovered is you get something like 4 to 8 to 4 to 10 times as much precipitation with a warm ocean off the coast for the Sierras, which had an ice cap, and also for Yellowstone Park that had an ice cap 3,000 feet deep. Another effect of the warm oceans, besides heavier precipitation, is that they would cause milder winters in the northern hemisphere as well as the southern hemisphere. The way that this works is the warm oceans heat up the air that spread inland, especially in wintertime in storms. And with the Arctic sea ice gone, it all adds up to much warmer winter. They'd be below freezing in many areas, but they would be warmer than today. When the evaporation that comes from the ocean condenses, you add all that what's called latent heat to the atmosphere, which also heats up the atmosphere. So the climate in the early ice age, right after the flood, is one of cool summers and mild winters. So you had very little seasonal contrast at the start of the ice age. Another effect of the warm ocean is that it would keep some areas that were glaciated unglaciated until the middle or the end of the ice age. For instance, where you had onshore flow of warm air warmed by the ocean water, the glaciation would delay for a number of years. For instance, along the west coast of the United States, like the Puget Sound area, probably didn't glaciate until midway during the ice age. Same thing in the British Isles, which probably didn't glaciate till midway in the ice age. Also, this onshore flow of warm, moist air would affect the Arctic region, because with no Arctic sea ice and the Arctic Ocean probably starting at a temperature about 86 degrees Fahrenheit, you could probably swim in the Arctic Ocean for a while after the flood. This warm water would warm in the air and add moisture and cause the lowlands of Siberia, Alaska, and the Yukon to be unglaciated. Not glaciated, it was only the mountains of Alaska, Siberia, and the Yukon territory that were glaciated, which is a major mystery of Earth science. When they run their computer models of glaciation, often some of the first places to glaciate are the lowlands as well as the highlands of Siberia, Alaska, and the Yukon Territory. So they're perplexed on why these areas were not glaciated. But yet, we can explain it with the post-flood ice age model by warm onshore flow of moist air in the Arctic. This also would cause heavy precipitation. So I would predict that early in the ice age, they probably were forests that grew clear to the Arctic Ocean. And then as it dried off towards the middle ice age period, these forests mostly died off. The third ingredient for an ice age, it has to persist year after year. And indeed, these mechanisms would persist year after year with the replenishment of the volcanic ash and aerosols from post-flood volcanism to evaporation of the oceans. This would continue for quite a while, but as the oceans cooled, your evaporation would become less and less, and so with time, you would get less moisture, and therefore there would come a time the ice would build up to a maximum. I estimated that the oceans would probably be about 86 degrees Fahrenheit on the average after the flood. There'd be cool spots and there'd be warm spots, of course, but an average of 86 degrees Fahrenheit. The average temperature of the ocean right now is 4 degrees centigrade or 38 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's a considerable cooling. But because of that cooling, you can time how long the ice age lasted by estimating the cooling of the ocean and the warming factors and adding them up. And you get a change in temperature, change in time. And if the temperature changed from about 86 degrees Fahrenheit and the ice age reached a maximum about, say, 50 degrees Fahrenheit, a cooling of 36 degrees Fahrenheit, then I just solved for time, and that's where I got an approximate time of 500 years. It's a rough estimate, and I used maximum and minimum variables for all the heating and cooling factors for the ocean. and I bracketed the time between about 1700 years and about 200 years. And the best estimate is about 500 years to reach glacial maximum. So it persists with time, but the ice age is rapid and it starts to end after about 500 years of buildup. Then it has to melt. First of all, you have to figure out how much ice and snow build up in that 500 years. And to do that, I had to figure where the moisture sources were. The main moisture source is the evaporation of the warm ocean, plus movement of warmer air and water vapor in that air from lower latitudes to higher latitudes. You got to figure out how much fell in the ocean versus the land. So I roughly estimated the average depth of the ice in the northern hemisphere is about 2,100 feet. In the southern hemisphere, which is mainly Antarctica, was about 4,000 feet. And then you got to figure out how long would it take to melt this. So I used the equation for the energy balance over a snow and ice cover. It's the same thing. You add up the heating factors for the ice and the cooling factors, and you add them all up, and you get a change in temperature, change in time. But in this case, the temperature doesn't change. It stays at 32 degrees. So you can convert that into a melting factor. And it melts about 10 meters a year, or 33 feet a year. And at that rate, the edge of the ice would melt in 70 years, and the interior of Canada, being cooler and with less solar radiation, would take more time, but that would cool in about 200 years. So the total time for the ice age was approximately 700 years based on the aftermath, climatic aftermath of the Genesis flood. Well, here we are at Red Lodge, Montana, in south central Montana, at the entrance to Rock Creek Valley. I've calculated in the post-flood rapid ice age that the melting of these ice sheets would be complete in about 70 to 100 years along the edge of the ice sheet and in the mountainous areas. So that represents catastrophic melting. And when you have catastrophic melting, you have a huge amount of water coming down. And we are standing on a glacial outwash terrace from the ice cap that melted over the Beartooth Mountains. When it melted, it sent all this gravel through this area, and you can just barely see the edge of it along that pediment above the city of Red Lodge. You could see the lower part of the terrace over against the mountains there. I should say that's the top of the outwash terrace. As it comes along here at the base of the pediment, here it goes a couple of miles. We're about a good 150 feet above the city here. Later on, it eroded part of it, and that is where the city of Red Lodge was built. There was no lakes ponded that I know of behind moraines that burst. It was just all catastrophic glacial melting, probably rivers half a mile wide, and they'd snake around and they'd deposit this gravel in a big, huge gravel bar that was left flat. And then it eroded after it was over with to form these terraces and in the valleys where the city of Red Lodge was built. Here we are in the Madison Valley of southwest Montana. This valley is a long north-south valley, similar to a lot of other valleys in southwest Montana, that's composed of mountain ranges, generally flat bottom valleys and other mountain ranges. But this valley is different than practically any valley in southwest Montana, in that these flat surfaces you see here, which look like pediments, are not. They're glacial outwash material from when the ice sheet in Yellowstone melted. Now, the ice in Yellowstone was up to 3,000 feet deep during the ice age. And when it came time to melting, it melted rapidly and was catastrophic. This Madison Valley has the Madison River, and the terminal moraine upstream at West Yellowstone is about 50 miles away. And so when the ice melted, it probably melted and sent huge amounts of water and gravel that carpeted this whole valley from south to north, forming these terraces all across the valley. Then at other times, the current was too fast and it eroded part of it out, forming the terraces. And then it did it again, and probably again. That's why you have multiple terraces of gravel piled up in this monstrous outwash fan. Another huge outwash fan is in Jackson Hole, north of Jackson, Wyoming, where you see similar gravel terraces and a few other drainages from the Yellowstone Park area. You see terraces, but they're a lot smaller than the Madison Valley and Jackson Hole, where the Snake River comes through. Now, there's probably about 200 feet of gravel, cobbles, and big boulders that came down when it melted. Now, the big boulders probably came down in icebergs with ice floating in the water because a lot of them are angular, so they didn't roll around. Some are sub-rounded. Well, here we are in Cody, Wyoming, in front of the Shoshone Water Gap, and we're standing on glacial outwash terraces from the Yellowstone ice cap that was about 3,000 feet deep that melted rapidly late in the ice age. It was so catastrophic, it sent huge amounts of water with boulders coming down through Cody, Wyoming, and it formed a series of terraces, approximately three terraces up to maybe 150 feet above the river. And we're standing on probably the lowest terrace, but out in the background you can see several other terraces. Here we are at Lake Roosevelt, which is dammed by Grand Coulee Dam in north central Washington. This was the site of Glacial Lake Columbia during the Ice Age. It's about at least 1,000 feet higher than Lake Roosevelt. And it was dammed by a lobe of the Cordillon Ice Sheet. It's called the Okanagan Lobe. Came down the Okanagan Valley over there and blocked the Columbia River, creating a huge lake in here that backed up clear east past Spokane. Now, the Okanagan Lobe is part of the Cordillon Ice Sheet that covered much of British Columbia. This lobe probably started in the mountains, probably because of the warm onshore flow of moist air, probably kept the lowlands unglaciated for a while. But as time went on and the oceans cooled, it went from the mountains to the lowlands and filled up practically all of British Columbia. And then east of the Rocky Mountains, we had a second major ice sheet called the Laurentide Ice Sheet, and it covered central and eastern Canada and the northern United States. And they believe there might have been another lobe in northeast Canada. Now, other locations, like in Europe and Asia, there was an ice sheet in northwest Europe and northwest Asia, including northwest Siberia. This one probably started in the mountains of Scandinavia and other mountains, because we still had a lot of warm onshore flow because of that warm ocean. Then it worked its way low down and then probably worked its way south. And also over mountainous areas in the world, we had ice cap. So other mountains in the Rocky Mountains were glaciated. Even in the northern Arizona, the San Francisco peaks were glaciated. In the southern hemisphere, Antarctica was glaciated. Probably glaciated starting in the mountains there and just filled in the lowlands and moved to the ocean in Antarctica. Same thing in Greenland. And in the tropical areas, all the main mountains that are pretty high had glaciers on them. Some have glaciers today. And we know that the glaciers were 3,000 feet lower in the tropical areas. So it was a worldwide glaciation. 30% of the land was glaciated compared to 10% today. Ever since the Great Ice Age, we've had just little tiny oscillations in climate. We had what's called the medieval warm period from about 800 AD to 1200 AD, where the Vikings settled southwest Greenland and farmed, and where they grew grapes in England and other plants grew in England that don't grow today. And then from about 1200 to 1400, we had the start of what's called the Little Ice Age. And this was a dip in the temperatures of which practically all the glaciers in the world advanced. Some of them covering up towns or parts of towns in Switzerland, for instance. And then the Little Ice Age lasted to about 1880, And then since then, glaciers have been receding steadily on the average to this present day. Now, the cause of the Little Ice Age is very likely long-term oscillations on the sun that we can correlate with long-term sunspot cycles. For instance, at the peak of the Little Ice Age, it was during what's called the Maunder Minimum, which was about an 80-year period of around 1700, where there were hardly any sunspots. And the way it works is the fewer the sunspots, the cooler the climate. There's a strong correlation. So, and we've been observing sunspots in 1610. So we had this Maunder Minimum where we had maybe 40 sunspots in an 80-year period when we should have had 40,000. Why? Not sure. It's forces on the sun. And this was the worst time of the Little Ice Age was during this. Superimposed on these long-term fluctuations due to the sun, we also had a lot of volcanism, and the volcanism would cause short period coolings that would cause the glaciers to advance even faster. Then when there's little volcanism, we'd have a warm period. So the Little Ice Age is strong correlation with long-term changes on the sun. Same with the medieval warm period, is probably a period of a lot of sunspots. Since the late 1800, we've had a lot of sunspots, and we've generally been in the warmer cycle of the sunspot cycle. A question always comes up of how many ice ages were there? They used to say there were four ice ages, and this is based on an analysis of the glacial debris in the central United States, central and northern Midwest. And then when they thought there were only four, they saw four everywhere, or three or five, or something like four. If there's only three, it got missed one time, they would say. It was kind of like a circular reasoning where they saw it everywhere. And in fact, even though the concept's been dead over 30 years, it still is in some museums. Now, they realize that when a glacier forms and moves, it tears up the previous ice ages, and so you can't really tell. So now they say we gotta go to the ocean bottom to determine the number of ice ages. So they take these deep sea cores and they core the bottom of the ocean. They bring it up and they analyze a number of variables in it. The percentage of carbonates, also the percentage of a certain isotope of oxygen. They do this ratio of oxygen 16 to oxygen 18, and they analyze this down the core. And it wiggles like this, it's high and then it goes low, high, low. And down the core, they get multiple oscillations. In fact, up to 50 now. And they claim that the cause of those oxygen oscillations is due to the glacial interglacial cycles on land. And so they claim now there's 50 ice ages in regular succession in the last 2.5 million years of uniformitarian Earth history. The last 800,000, they were separated by 100,000 years. Before that, they're separated by 40,000 years. You might wonder, why is that? Well, over 60 theories, they decided they're going to believe in the astronomical theory due to the orbital changes in the geometry of the Earth going around the sun, slight changes in the orbit, it'll be a little flatter, the tilt of the Earth changes a little bit, and the precession of the equinox, they call it. It just changes the geometry of the Earth-Sun relationship so that you get a little different sunlight in different areas. Because of these changes in the geometry of the Earth, the amount of sunlight varies seasonally and latitudinally. And when you get low solar radiation in high northern latitudes, that's supposed to be correlated with ice ages. And when you get more sunlight, it's correlated with interglacials. So this is how they do it. And they make these cycles up and they fit everything into these cycles because they believe in the astronomical theory of the ice ages. And it's these deep sea cores that they claim is evidence. But there's a lot of variables associated with these interpretations. This is interpretation of data. You do have the wiggles. There's lots of other variables involved. I don't believe they have anything to do with the ice age. How do we tell how many ice ages there were? Well, you go on land and you take a look. usually in most areas you see evidence of only one glaciation in areas glaciated. In fact, the secular scientists are starting to realize this. I just pulled up an article from the technical journal. It's called The Developments in Quaternary Science, volume 17, page 575 to 589. And this is talking about glaciation in Alberta. And this reinforces other papers in the past. This is by Lionel Jackson and two others. They conclude that in the Rocky Mountain foothills of Alberta, there was only one ice age. And also in other areas of Alberta, the evidence is that there was only one ice age. And in other areas where there's stacked till sheets was separated by, we'll say, sand or other debris, they can be explained by one ice age. That's where they got the multiple ice ages at the boundary because of the complications of the ice lobes shifting and backing up, retreating and advancing, surging. So they're coming to the conclusion that there was only one ice age. But there is other evidence there was only one. South of the ice sheet, you had a lot of wind-blown silt called luss, especially in North America and Northwest Europe. This luss, when they analyze it, comes from mainly, or almost totally, from what they believe was the last ice age. Where is all the windblown silt from all the previous ice ages? Well, they don't know, and they don't know where it went if it disappeared. So to me, this is pretty strong evidence there was only one ice age. But here's another piece of evidence. When you go beyond the edge of the ice sheet, maybe 100 miles north of the boundary, you find a few areas that were not glaciated. They were missed. They're called driftless areas. One famous area is in southwest Wisconsin. Another area is in northeast Montana and adjacent Saskatchewan that were missed. Well, why would they be missed? They were not glaciated at all. If you had multiple glaciations, a couple glaciations, four like they used to believe, or 50 now that they believe, how could those places be missed all this time? But in one ice age, of which the ice sheet was a lot thinner than they believe, which there is evidence for that, you can miss a few areas by chance. So it can be accounted for by one ice age in which the ice sheet was fairly thin. One more piece of evidence that there's only one ice age, there's maybe a half dozen, is that a lot of animals lived during the ice age. Woolly mammoths, a lot of them are extinct now. At the end of their last ice age, in their scheme, we had huge extinction, a major mystery of science. We didn't have any extinctions after any of the other ice ages, or except maybe isolated one or two. But we had huge, massive extinction of large animals at the end of their last one. Why not at the end of their 50 have all these extinctions? To me, it's because they never existed, but only one, and it was after the end of the post-flood ice age.
Okay, that's the end of that. There are three parts to this thing. We're not going to watch all three of them. The first part, he gets into talking about evidence of an ice age. He talked a little bit about, at one point, showing the rocks that have been deposited. Some of those big rocks, it may have been several hundred miles that there were those type of rocks from that area. In other words, it'd be like a rock quarry up in Michigan would have that type of rock, but yet we'd have a few of those rocks scattered down here. Well, how do they get down here? Well, through the glaciers. There's two ways. One was it was pushed by a glacier if it came down this far. The other way would be through the floods like he was talking about. It's one thing we don't think about sometimes. We have that much ice in one area. When it started melting, that water had to go somewhere. You know, in the out west now, when the snow begins to melt up in the mountains, a lot of the cities and places, they look forward to that because that's how they get their water supply. But if that happened on a large scale, we know what floods do on a local level. That's what would happen. And so some of those rocks would get pushed down either by the floods or, as he said, sometimes they get locked up in those glaciers, and they end up with icebergs, which would be carrying rocks until they melted and they'd drop. And so the irregular ones, or the ones that had the sharp edges, those would be the ones that would be trapped in like the blocks of ice. They get floated down, and then when it melted, they just dropped. The other ones that were more rounded, they'd be the ones that were rolling along with the current and get the rough edges worn off, and they'd be a little bit smoother. So that's how some of those rocks would get transported. The third part of this, he kind of gets into a little bit of the, he showed a little bit there, like the woolly mammoths. They existed. I mean, there's no two ways and doubts about that. Yes, Tom.
When Linda and I lived in the interior of Alaska, it was in some of that part they said it was non-glaciated. On the Yukon River, there's a big high bank they call the Boneyard. And once we were going down there and we saw a woolly mammoth tusk sticking out of the permafrost in the mud. And people, we've got some mastodon right here. Johnny Morris has got one in the
a lot of technical stuff that he talks about here, and like I said, the main point I'm trying to get across is that it takes specific events to happen at the same time for an ice age to occur. It isn't something that just happens once in a while and then it quits. Specific events had to take place. What would cause all that? We looked at some evidence earlier, and we'll look at some more evidence a little bit later in the lesson, that shows that at one time, the world, the whole world, was tropical. Is the whole world tropical today? No. So something happened. Something changed. The flood is what answers everything. And one of the reasons we're looking at this, I know we've had some questions about why are we studying this? If God did it, we just accept it and go on. Well, that's true. But God does tell us that he flooded the world. That flood leaves behind evidence. We can look at evidence. Even though you and I may be grounded firm in the truth, we know whatever God did, he did, and he can handle anything. We know that. But there are some people that their faith isn't as strong as ours. There are a lot of people that have a lot of trouble between evolution and creation. And so we're trying to look at the evidence, look at the pieces of the puzzle and put them together and says, which model best explains what we see around us? Does evolution best explain what we see around us? Or does the creation model, along with the flood, best explain what we see around us? I believe the creation model, God created everything, but then he destroyed it by sending the flood. It reshaped the earth in a short period of time. He mentioned at one time that the evolutionists say that there were ice ages over, 2.5 million years, whatever that was. Well, we know that the earth hasn't been here that long. It's only been here about 6,000 years. So sometime in that 6,000 years, something catastrophic had to have happened. What happened? Well, the biggest catastrophic event that we know of is the flood. And so when you take that information and begin to look at what would cause an ice age, the pieces of the puzzle fit together. Again, the evolutionists, they have a trouble trying to figure out how to make all this work because they don't have a catalyst. Because they believe everything has been going on since billions of years ago, it really hasn't changed that much. And so that's the main reason that I want to present this type of information. It's not that because we doubt that the flood existed. I know all of us believe the flood existed. But it does help put together some of the pieces of the puzzle that we have. And one of the pieces of the puzzle, like he was talking about there, is those mammoths, those big hairy elephants. Where'd they go? Well, one of the theories, and we'll just talk about it real quick because our time's up. One of the theories is that when the ice age or the glaciers begin to melt, the water rise pretty fast. We talked about before, if you had all this ice, water composed into ice, the ocean levels would be a lot lower. So some of these flatlands, like you look at the Gulf of Mexico and different places where the water, if it was down 300 or 400 feet, there would be a lot of land exposed. There would be a lot more islands exposed. Well, if that water began to rise fast, and these animals that were there during the Ice Age were trying to get to high ground, they may pick out an island or something that would look high, but then the water kept rising, and where could they go? They couldn't go nowhere. So a lot of them drowned. We have the fossils. There's also evidence that there was, at one period, a quick freeze. Some of them were basically frozen in place. But again, the events of the flood help explain a lot of this. If anybody wants to see this video all the way through, just let me know and I'll let you use it for a while, because there's more information on it, but we're not going to go through all that. Like I said, there's two more parts to that, but I think we've seen enough just to kind of show you that the flood is a catalyst that would cause an ice age. Any quick questions? Like I said, I know there's a lot of technical stuff that he talked about, but don't get involved in that too much. Just look at the fact that the flood was an event that God sent on the earth, and it did change the earth. And the best place for this ice age to take place would have been right after the flood, because of the reasons he talked about. And since then, the earth's been settling down. We still have periods of cooling and heating. Part of it has to do with the sunspots, like he mentioned. I didn't realize there was that much result from the sunspots as far as our temperature here on Earth. I knew there was some, but if it just shuts itself down, it's like a big oven that just kind of cools down. Well, it's going to cool the Earth down. When it gets active again, it heats things back up. Well, during the Middle Ages, we do know that it cooled down quite a bit, but apparently it was because of the sunspot activity on the sun. Let's go to Heavenly Father in prayer, and then we'll be dismissed. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this beautiful day that you've given us. We thank you for the sunshine and the rain and the seasons that come with living here on this earth. We know that you're all-powerful, you're all-knowing. We know that you're in control of everything that we have, that we exist. We pray that we'll always look to you as our guide and also our Savior. We pray that you be with us as we go through our life, that we will always trust in your word. Even though we may not have all the answers, we do know that you are in control, and that we need to put our lives in your hands and do your will so that we can spend eternity with heaven with you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.